This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For daily content, follow Bartholomew Town on Instagram and TikTok. Half Street Group brings a new generation's perspective to leadership communications, strategic public relations, and digital marketing. Half Street helps organizations and leaders take control of their own stories and manage their reputations. They get results for their clients by focusing on audience, message, and culture, and by leveraging their decade-long relationship with media and opinion leaders in the Ocean State and throughout New England. Join me and Half Street Group founder and president Mike Rea for a conversation every month about news of the day, the hottest media analysis, and a look behind the scenes at how impactful leaders drive conversations. Learn more at halfstreetgroup.com.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.
You know, my first question here this morning, great name, Fusion 3 Consulting. And as I peruse your website, it's really robust in terms of your specialization and exactly what you do. But I guess for the audience out there, what is it that you do?
Sure. I think in its simplest form, we can really just describe Fusion 3 as we help companies become more efficient using technology.
Oh, that's simple. That's like not even an elevator pitch. That's like a staircase pitch. That's great.
Thank you. It can get complicated. So we want people to understand what we do in, I think, the simplest terms for sure.
Melissa Bouchard is the CEO and co-founder of Fusion 3 Consulting, a Coventry-based firm here in Rhode Island. And, you know, there's this ongoing discussion that I think for my entire life as someone who grew up in Rhode Island and left for a long time and then came back and kept hearing this over and over again, Rhode Island is a terrible place to do business. We hear this all the time. And while there are some metrics that maybe from a red tape standpoint or from, you know, a taxation or tax incentive standpoint, that may be true. But from a geographical standpoint and from a people-powered standpoint, it's definitely not true. There's a lot of great ideas that come out of and stay in Rhode Island, including your work. So I'll ask you from that 36,000 foot view, is Rhode Island for you a good place to do business?
I have to say at this point, it is. And I think one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is how many resources Rhode Island has. They're maybe not publicized all that well, but there really is just a great ecosystem once you uncover it, I would say, between things like the Goldman Sachs program that's local to Rhode Island, which is awesome. They're not everywhere. So the fact that Rhode Island actually has that in state is amazing. There's a great presence of the SBA to help entrepreneurs and folks that want to start their own business, as well as, I would say, a large volume of other just nonprofit and or government organizations that help, you know, the business community in Rhode Island. So I think maybe elevating that a bit more might help reduce that stigma just a little bit.
I would agree. I attended the graduation of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses a couple of years ago. And just speaking with some of the folks on the ground, it was like, you know, you realize that there is a lot to uncover. There's a lot of opportunity here in the state. And I feel like some of the technological advances that we've made in the last even just couple of years in terms of the ability to do work more remotely. And obviously, there's always been the phone. There's always been the ability to be based in Rhode Island and have a work product that is global. That's nothing new. I mean, that goes back to indigenous times. But there really is something about Rhode Island right now. We see it in real estate trends where people from New York and Boston are saying, you know what, I think I'll go live in South Kingstown instead of Williamsburg, Brooklyn. What's been your experience in terms of interaction, I should say, on a regional, national, and global basis with the work that you do?
Sure. I think first, we're very fortunate. We took, I would say, maybe an eco-friendly stance that we decided to start Fusion 3 and be 100% remote. So we don't have any office space or anything like that. at the end of the day, we're consultants. People don't want to come see us. They want us to go see them. So we've been leveraging technology to meet with our clients, deliver our services. I think they appreciate it because now they're not paying for travel or anything like that. And honestly, I think Rhode Island's a great topic to bring up because oftentimes, unless if you're talking to people in the Northeast, they're not quite sure where Rhode Island is.
Right.
I've heard a lot of, oh, Long Island, New York. And we're like, no, can't you tell by the accent? That's not the same. So I think that's funny, but it's a great opportunity to share a little bit about what I would consider the hidden treasure of Rhode Island. There's a lot of great places. There's a lot of history. I'm a big fan of the beach and the ocean. So love the fact that we have a plethora of water, lakes, and all of that. So it comes up great in conversation.
What's your favorite beach?
What is my favorite beach? I have to say, I'm really impartial to Narragansett Town Beach. I really like that area.
Yeah. Well, I lucky enough, I grew up in Charlestown. And I'd say the Narragansett Seawall was like ground zero for me, especially once I got my license. You know, that's where you kind of go hang out. It's interesting some of the changes they've run into some governmental walls in terms of implementing parking restrictions, things like this down there. But beach access and keeping Narragansett Beach accessible to as many folks as possible is a huge priority. And I think the more that we close off aspects of our state, whether it's our open spaces, whether it's the beach, whether it's kind of gatekeeping programs, whether it's Goldman Sachs or otherwise, you know, that damages what you've just kind of laid out as some of the advantages, strategic and really quality of life advantages that come from Rhode Island. And it's important that we don't make Rhode Island less available to people and almost like a squirrel gathering nuts and just kind of hide it.
No, I would agree. And I think maybe taking a page out of the book, at least in that regard, from a New Hampshire or something like that would be worthwhile. You know, they elevate and they try to make people more aware of all of their outdoor space and activities and how beautiful their state actually is. So it's a little bit of a mindset shift. So that'd be nice.
Yeah,
well, we're trying. We have some folks listening that will pick that up and start implementing some things.
I would hope so. The All That campaign is, you know, I don't know. I'm not so sure it sells exactly what we're discussing here today. But that's a conversation for a different time, I suppose. You know, I'm interested, and it's kind of at this point almost, you know, it's a worst. We like to think that we're in a post era when it comes to anything. Identification wise, what with business, whether it's a conversation around women led business, whether it's a conversation around, you know, quote unquote, minority owned business, whatever it is, we like to think that, okay, that's not something to even discuss anymore. It's just a business. Unfortunately, the reality is that's not the case. We're still in a world with robust inequities. So I ask you, as a women CEO, and someone in 2024 who has a vision and is executing on that vision, what are some of the challenges that, from your experience, women face today in the entrepreneurial sector?
Sure. I think, you know, one of the main things that I hear, you know, from networking groups, people that I connect with, fellow, you know, women in technology, women in leadership, I think that at times there can be a little bit of an intimidation factor if you don't feel that you're represented in an existing group. So with that in mind, I think one of the best things that folks can do if they're thinking about, whether it's technology, leadership, or honestly, anything as you were describing, right? There's a lot of industries that have inequities. I think it's a mindset shift of, you know, if you don't see yourself represented, then be the person to represent other people like you. And as scary and challenging as that can be, I think it really will benefit and help the individual build some confidence within themselves and make space. So I just think it's really a little bit of, at this time, it's a mindset shift. And I think, as we were talking about in other areas, there's a lot of resources available for people to tap into, whether it's networking groups, creating your own panel of advisors, whatever that is, to help you build that confidence to show up in that way. So that's kind of my thought on that topic.
I'm taking a look at your website. You seem to have a team of six on here. How big is your team? And, you know, in terms of from a consultancy standpoint, do you have specialists who are contracted on certain areas, or do you really get most of your work done with the team depicted on your website?
Sure. So we do have today the six team members, and that I would say is our core team. But I think in the nature of what we do, we have a strong network of strategic partners. Many of them are independent contractors with very specific skill sets. So I like to think of us at times as almost like a general contractor. We have, together with the leadership team, a lot of industry knowledge and expertise. So we can talk to people about business. That's the priority in the conversation. What is a business challenge? What is a pain point that we're trying to help a business solve? And as we learn that, we put together a specialized team to meet that need. So that's likely some folks from our team, but we're not going to profess that we have all the experts right here, but that's why we have strategic relationships to bring in contractors as needed.
Mm. We're in an era that's been really expanding for, in from my standpoint, in my various industries that I've tapped into since really the mid-2000s, since I graduated college. I feel like people have told me time and time again, be the connector. Be either the person that is delivering, and if you can't deliver on a project or an idea or whatever the case is, connect the right person to, whether it's the client, the friend, whatever the case may be. One, there is a monetary value to that if that's the direction that you choose to go. But also, more than anything, expertise is so important. And if you don't possess a specific area of expertise fully, confidently, and that you can see through from point A to point B, just go ahead and dish it out. I feel like too many people get jammed up. You see this in the creative sector a lot, where someone might be an incredible, I don't know, journalist, let's say, and they try to make TikTok videos and they have no idea how to use a camera or lighting or anything like that. And you go, man, that diminishes your project. But if you had connected with the right person, you may have actually been able to compete in that digital realm a lot better because somebody with expertise is involved. That's one small example that I'm just thinking of that I literally just saw this morning. And,
yep.
You know, from that standpoint, what's your message to folks in Rhode Island and beyond about being a connector and being the recipient of connected expertise? How key is that to the contemporary business tech entrepreneurial landscape?
Yeah, I do think it's actually a critical piece of the landscape. And that's what, if we amplify the message, that's what's going to allow organizations like Fusion 3 to compete against some of the larger boutique consultancies or insert, you know, whatever industry you're in. Collaboration is key. And I think it's really just trying to educate folks about how that really is a better path. To your point, you were highlighting expertise. The odds are, if I'm a large consultancy, I have people who aren't utilized. They're not billing out. So that's likely the person, if a project comes up, where I'm going to assign the person. Does that mean they have the best expertise and skill set to help you solve your problem? Probably not, not necessarily. And I think that's where shifting the thought process of, if you can work with one main contact, such as Fusion 3, and we can talk to you about your business challenge, then we can identify, well, who is the right team with the right skill set to solve that problem? Because to your point, it's varied and it's going to be different from project to project or business challenge to business challenge. So I think it's really important for folks to think a little bit about shifting how they do business. And the subcontracting isn't always a bad thing. I think you just need to have a good, transparent conversation with who you're partnering with.
Right. Because sometimes white labeling also, you know, which for folks who don't know, that's basically pretending that you have a widget or a service that you actually don't, and you're just taking somebody else's work and putting your name on it. It can work to a certain extent, but it requires transparency. You know, this we're in a moment right now where we were kind of talking about this offline, and you mentioned it in terms of the footprint of not having office space. And certainly, you know, there are people in Rhode Island who are property owners in Providence, Joe Paolino, and others that would probably say, come back to the office, rent a bunch of office space. It's the most important thing you can do from the standpoint of building a team and building a workflow that is, you know, maximized. And I would agree that there's no question that in person is, from a creative standpoint, from a day-to-day standpoint, there is a value to it. But let's get real. We're not trending in that direction. Manhattan mm-hmm. real estate will show you that. DC real estate will show you that. I mean, just take a look at even in Providence. How have you maintained and grown a business without having a physical space, both in terms of a physical office space where everybody reports to every day? And then from your own standpoint as an entrepreneur, how have you separated your work from your day-to-day life? As you know what I mean? Like, because we talked offline about your she shed. How have you done that?
Sure. From a team standpoint, I think nowadays it really can be very easy, and it can be easy to try to overcomplicate it. There's a lot of collaboration tools, whether it's Zoom, Teams, Slack, things like that. So I think between implementing, you know, certain collaborative policies and things like that, that helps keep a team feel together. The other thing we try to focus on is opportunities for us to get together in person that add value, both from a professional development standpoint and a team building standpoint. So we have annual conferences that we attend where team members get together, whether it's a Women in Technology, it could be a ServiceNow conference. There's all these different things where we try to find opportunities to get together in person. But again, where it adds value and it's focused, which I think makes it a little bit more special because it's not all the time. You don't take it for granted. You can really still build that relationship. And I think the other thing is also just getting to know your team. Like, how do they work best? How do they thrive? And investing in that. Some people need a little bit more support when you're 100% remote, and other people love it because they really like to be independent, feel like they're on their own, but as long as you're available to answer questions, that's how they thrive. So I think that's an important detail as well, is it's not for everybody. Some people need to be in a physical space separate from their home life, and that's okay. But for folks that really, I think, enjoy and appreciate a hybrid approach of collaboration and working on their own, I think remote work can work really well. For myself, as you mentioned, I guess you let the cat out of the bag. I do have what they call a she shed. So that does help me have a physically separate space from my home life. So as silly as it sounds, I do think it's a subconscious thing where when I leave my house and go into the separate space, I'm like, okay, now I'm at work. But it is a little bit of discipline as well. It's easy to check your phone. It's easy to check your email even when the day is done. So some of it's just self-regulation to make sure you're not burning yourself out, so to speak.
That's my challenge. It's less so. I do have a separate space where I do my work, but it is, boy, is it hard to leave it behind. And I'll find myself, I was on vacation, not, you know, I didn't go to Hawaii, but I was on Block Island last year, and I had made this commitment that, all right, I'm not going to check my phone. I'm just going to like actually try to take a break because I actually physically and mentally needed it. And I found myself not only checking my phone, but running around covering Block Island town council meetings while I was out there. The separation piece is really difficult. People say it's a workaholic mentality. And I do think that there is like actually some truth to that. But there's also, we live in a time where the expectation is, you're available. And if you're the leader of an organization, no matter if that organization is governmental and, you know, you're the governor, or if you're the CEO of or a small business leader of any kind, small, mid or large scale business, there's an expectation that you're going to be available. And with the work from home, quote unquote, hybrid mentality, I feel like that's the trapping that has been most difficult for me and for others to overcome. So I guess sort of our last area here to leaders out there or aspiring leaders, how important is it to be able to separate or turn your brain off from your work and at the same time maintain a level of availability that whether it's crisis mode or even just day-to-day mode, staying connected without losing momentum or losing the trust of those you're serving?
Sure. I think there's a couple of things with the culture shift to just always having our handy little devices with us. I think that's part of the challenge is you really are never separated from the technology that you're using to stay connected. So with that in mind, I think some of it's just being proactive and setting some boundaries for yourself or your team. And as a leader, I really do think it's critical to lead by example. So if you don't want your team to experience burnout, I think you need to help show them what that looks like. If they're on vacation, let them be on vacation. And I think a lot of it's just around being proactive and communicating. So if you have clients and you know you're going to be away, touch base with all of them, you know, before you do that. Have some type of communication on your website, your email, your service request system that says what to do in this meanwhile and the expectation of when you're going to get back to them. And I really do think by doing little things like that, it makes a big difference to say, hey, it's okay to be disconnected. Here's the expectation, and this is how we'll help you. And as leaders, I think you need to show your team how that works and how you can support them and just make sure that you have a plan in place while they're out of office so they don't come back and feel buried. Because I think that's the reason why a lot of people stay connected, the fear of not being able to catch up once they're out.
Yeah, the lovely feeling of opening Outlook on Monday morning when you didn't open it on Sunday and you have 100 different requests in there from that you have to sift through. Maybe one of them is valid, but yeah, I know that's like one of my least favorite moments of the week is that, okay, great. Even a day away can sometimes create a tremendous annoyance. And yeah, it's about managing it, no question.
It can. And as a solopreneur, I realize it's a little bit different than when you have a team to help you. But I also think that's where you can leverage either, you know, technology, systems, or, you know, our great gig economy right now, someone to help cover, you know, the bases while you're out. When we have a team in place, I will say one of the things I often share with the team is if we put the right coverage plan in place, customers were communicated to, your team was communicated to of how to cover, you can mark all as red. And we should have all the important things covered. And anything that you missed will come back around if it's ad hoc, just to reduce that stress. And that's also a way, I think, just to build trust amongst your team. Like, I have your back, you know, Bill, if you're going to be out of the office, I've got you. You don't have to stress. You don't have to work on vacation. You know, we can help each other out. So I think that's important.
Super smart insights. How can people get a hold of you in terms of website or, you know, just reaching out in general?
Sure. We have our website, as you mentioned, and that's fusion3consulting.com. We're also very active on LinkedIn. So folks can search for us there at Fusion 3. I'm very active on LinkedIn as well. So folks can find me, Melissa Bouchard, and those are the main platforms that we're on.
Melissa Bouchard, thanks so much for your time this morning.
All right. Thank you as well, Bill. It was great to chat with you.